I'd like to speak with you tonight about truth in advertisement. I think it's the bread and butter issue for Christian living. Truth in advertisement. We got somebody hailing there. This is a tough hood. I know. Well, the last time we were together, last Wednesday night here, we were at the museum, if you recall, and where there was an old man gazing into a mirror, giving a stinging critique of an artist's rendering, as he mistakenly thought, unaware, of course, that he was really describing himself. And he used such words as ugly, shabby, shoddy, things like that. And, of course, embarrassed after his wife managed to get and point out to him that he was really talking about himself. And, of course, we hooked in there to James chapter 1, verse 23, where it says, "There, if any be a hearer of the word and not a doer, he's like a man that beholds himself in a glass." There's a very obscure word there. You only use two times in the New Testament. Glass, mirror. And it says there, he looks in to that glass and he forgets what manner of man he was, and he just goes his way. What he sees, even though you are what you are, he is indifferent, is the sense of that. The only other place in the New Testament where that same word appears is in 2 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 12. You might want to look at that one just for a second. 2 Corinthians 13, 12. Where we read in part, "For now we see through a glass darkly." Am I not there?
No.
Find me another one. Huh?
Oh
my. 2 Corinthians 13, 12? No, I gotta stick by my guns on this one. I can't make two mistakes here in a row. 1 Corinthians 13:12. So it was in the right church, but you know you're right. No, as a matter of fact, I have number 2 written down here. Of course, a penmanship error. My one sometimes look like a 2. Easy, sister.
I
do the best I can with what I have. In any event, 1 Corinthians 13:12 says, "For now we see through a glass or a mirror," there's that same word, "darkly," which is enigmatically. Oftentimes we look into the mirror and we're puzzled, or somebody else is. And when we look at these two places, the word mirror is a derivative of a word that is in 2 Corinthians, by the way, at chapter 3 and verse 18. Okay, it's there. Said verse is, "That we all with an open face beholding in a glass." Now there's a different word there. You behold in a glass, a mirror, a reflection, the glory of the Lord. And we're changed into the same image from glory to glory. Even, and here, very important words, even as, precisely the same, exactly the same, as by the Spirit of the Lord, being changed into the same image, precisely the same, So now we get an intimation of what our reflection in the mirror ought to reveal. Now the poor guy from last week, he had an excuse. He couldn't see. And he was just deaf enough that he couldn't hear his wife trying to get his attention. And so he went on with it. In Romans chapter 8, verse 29, for example, this reflection, what it ought to be. And again, underscores the image factor. For whom he did foreknow, he did also predestinate to be conformed to the image of his son. Now, I don't know the precise point of time you were saved, how many years you've been saved, but I do know that whenever you were saved, that conformity process began and continues to this present day, will continue until you are exactly, perfectly, precisely conformed to the image of the Son. But it's an ongoing project. You are not now the same as you were when you were first saved. You're not. Many things have changed and are in the process of changing. So when we think about that, such conformity is a present work in progress. And I think sometimes the truth of that gets lost in the shuffle of Christian living itself, where there's little or no attention made to it. Now, the great resurrection chapter in 1 Corinthians 15 and verse number 49, it says, as we have borne the image of the earthy. Now, that's what we see in the mirror now. That's what the poor guy last week saw in the mirror. We've borne the image of the earthy. With equal certainty, we shall bear the image of the heavenly. We shall. Okay? And so when we think about truth in advertisement, we who are saved, we make a claim by way of our profession that we are Christians. And that's a bread and butter issue, this truth in advertisement. And a question comes to mind is, We all can agree that something started when we were saved and it's going to be completed in heaven. But what about in between time? Will there be any glimpse of heaven's image shining forth in some measure before then? Is it reasonable to think that people around us can see, ever so slightly, if need be the case, some marked progress? Is it a fair question to say that as you have come to Grace Baptist Church and you observe people over the years here, have you noticed in certain people that there are changes taking place in their lives? I was thinking earlier today of a particular person that whenever that party first arrived here during she was recently saved, began here, took an interest in the study of the scriptures, but when it came time to pray, was very off to the side, silent, timid, okay? But now, to hear that same person, okay, it's remarkable what the Holy Spirit does in the heart of people over a period of time. Now, if I spoke to her, I didn't say anything to her today, but if I spoke to her, she probably would blush and be embarrassed about the contrast between what was and what is. But it's evident to me, and it's one of those unpurchased blessings that are there for the taking whenever you see it. And for every time you see something like that in a person's life, it brings about joy. Now, there's another place I want you to see in 2 Corinthians 4. It seems to indicate, in response to this question, is there any glimpse of heaven's image shining forth now? Well, I think 2 Corinthians 4:6 indicate something at least when it says, God who commanded the light to shine out of darkness hath shined in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. Give to whom? Well, the fourth verse talks about them who don't believe. And what are we giving them who don't believe? Well, we're giving them the light implanted in our souls by the grace of God. And so when you think about this, first stop now tonight. What ought the art critics see when they see thee? And I think we can agree this truth. The first thing that they ought to be able to see in the life of an authentic Christian person is light. Light versus darkness. Jesus said, you are the light of the world. You are the light of the world. And you don't take that light and put it under a bushel. That light is conspicuous. So it implied there is, it's there to be seen and people see it. Light. Truth in advertisement. You know, the Apostle John talks about those who walk in darkness. Now keep in mind that he's talking to people there, writing to folks who he was drawing a line between them who were and them who say they are. He said, now if those who walk in the light are of a one kind, those who walk in the darkness are another kind. And you can't walk in darkness and claim to be a child of the children of light. So light would be the first thing. And you know, the word glass in 2 Corinthians 3:18 provides some instruction too. Because it's a compound word and it's encased in that word is a word that we get a rendering like optical, optics, something seeable, something that has been seen. And the word there is literally to gaze with the eyes wide open as a person would gaze upon something when they saw something so stunning, surprising, that the eyes come wide open. Now think what we read there in 2 Corinthians 3:18. Think what we read there. If we retreat just a little bit to that point of reference, let me rehearse. We all with open face beholding in a glass the glory of the Lord are changed into the same image from glory to glory. And that the word glass is the word that I'm pointing out is the extension of optics there. You can see something. So what do we see? What do we see? Well, in the Beatitudes, Matthew chapter 5 verse 8 says, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall, here's the word now, see God. Now isn't that stunning enough? But, you know, to make a case for the reality of God is almost impossible forensically because no man has seen God at any time. And yet we love Him whom we've never seen, yes? And the promises in Matthew 5 verse 8, blessed are the pure in heart for they shall see God. Ought not the people who are reading our advertisements as Christians see God in us? Inasmuch as we are being conformed to the image of God the Son. And then this. If you come to John chapter 11 and verse 40, John chapter 11 verse 40, of course, is the Lazarus resurrection chapter. You get that reference in hand. Jesus is having a conversation with Martha. And Jesus has been notified that Lazarus has been in the tomb 4 days and he's by now decaying. And so in verse 40, Jesus said unto her, said I not unto thee that if thou wouldst believe, thou shouldst, here's the word, see the glory of God. How would Martha see the glory of God in this case? She would see it when Lazarus, raised by the power of God, physically comes out of that tomb. She'd see it. And just as clear and just as convincing is the spiritual resurrection that you and I experienced when God saved us and raised us from the grave of our sins, where we were dead in trespasses and sins, and made us alive. And so you might, I don't think it's a stretch at all to extend the term glory of God as it would apply to Lazarus to each of you when you were saved. Men shall see the power of God when they see the glory of God manifest in you. They see that. And so the second thing that I think that Truth in Advertisement lends is they're going to see the light and they're going to see the life. They're going to see life. You know, it's probably illustrated in Acts chapter 9, verse 17. In Acts 9, 17, where is the encounter of the Lord and Saul. And in the aftermath of that, Acts 9, 17, we find that Jesus, the way and the truth and the life, appeared, Paul's testimony or Saul's testimony, appeared unto him. He appeared. He made himself visible to him. He stopped them on that Damascus road. And Paul's later testimony before the authorities in Acts chapter 26 is this. He recounts what was told to him, but not revealed in Acts 9, but apparently was spoken to him in Acts 26, around verse 18, where apparently the Lord in the conversation with him said, "I have appeared unto thee to make thee a minister and a witness unto me." Minister, and literally the word is martyr. Did Paul die a martyr for the faith? He did. And so when we think about this matter of life, we maybe can connect it romantically, emotionally to a hymn, Amazing Grace. I once was blind, but now I see. That's evidence of life. That's evidence of life. Dead men can't see anything. Dead men don't even have their eyes open for the most part, and every effort on those who fall upon a dead person, whether in the hospital, they reach over and the first thing they do is put their hand over their face and they close their eyes. And then they take a shroud and put up over their head. They see nothing. Spiritually, the same thing is so. When we were lost in sin, we were blind as bats. Now, can bats still navigate? Do they need sight to navigate? But nature compels them to go where something else isn't, right? Do you ever wonder why a bat typically, there are exceptions. I've seen dumb bats, dingbats, as they say, who will fly right into the side of a building. You know, I don't know. Sonar must have went down at the wrong time. But typically they don't. And how is it that a blind bat, only by nature now, can find a tiny dinky little insect and swoop in on it and eat? It's amazing to me. But you know, unsaved people, though they cannot see, can still navigate. They're like dead men walking. They don't see anything. They don't appreciate anything. They're incapable of loving anything at all meaningful. And yet, living folk can. And yet, after one is no longer a visible museum artifact, the life and all that was seen and known to be true of you and me is found in a book. You might say a living autobiography. And that also is in 2 Corinthians. Chapter 3. I'm giving Claypool a heads advantage here. 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verses 2 and 3. Ye are our epistle written in our hearts, known and read of all men, forasmuch as you are manifestly declared to be the epistle of Christ, ministered by us, written not with ink, but with the Spirit of the living God, not in tables of stone, but in fleshly tables of the heart. Ye are our epistle. And so the third thing that truth in advertisement lends itself to is there's first of all the light, there then is the life, and then there's the likeness, which takes us back to where we began in 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 18. But we all, with open face, beholding in a glass the glory of the Lord, are changed into the same image from glory to glory, even as exactly as by the Spirit, exact likeness indeed. Now, such conformity is present, it's ongoing, it's a work in progress, and it culminates only in perfect conformity to the image of God's Son, according to Romans chapter 8 and verse 29. I think this is a bread and butter issue of Christian living. A bread and butter issue of Christian living, which brings to mind a story. There were two old friends living in this small country village. One was a baker, one was a farmer. And both of them thrived off of each other, so to speak. The baker had a reputation in his village for being a fine baker. All his baked goods were exquisite. Couldn't walk past his shop, but people just get lured in. Sort of like Buddy the Cake Boss. You know, you walk, you take a look at his donut shop, and you just, wow, too bad he doesn't have a branch working to tanning. But anyhow, this baker, he had this reputation. And he thought, well, you know, my friend, the farmer, sells butter. So I'm going to buy my butter off of my friend, the farmer. Business thrived for both. But then the baker began to notice that his buns and his bread began to shrink some in size. They weren't of the same texture or quality. And he concluded that the farmer was cheating him on the butter. His friend, the farmer, was cutting back the butter. And so he was so angry and upset how could a friend do this to a friend, that he had him arrested. And when they're standing before the magistrate says to the farmer, he said, hey, do you not have weights to parse out your butter? And the farmer says, no, of course I don't. And the magistrate says, well, how is it that you, weigh your butter? And he says, the weight that I use is the 1 pound loaf of my friend the baker, and I've been using that loaf for some period of time. And so if your product is not up as advertised, you're the only one that you have the blame. Which is to say that there needs to be truth in advertising concerning Christian living as a bread and butter issue. If you're advertising the bread, make sure you're giving people the bread. If you're putting a spread on it, like the butter, or if ingredients contained in the bread are the sweet butter, make sure that it's all there like advertised. So when people read your living autobiography and they see the revelation of the reality of your Christian life, may it all ring true. May you and me never, ever be put in a position where we are charged with false advertisement. Ever. It's a bread and butter issue. You agree? I agree.